10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and you are listening live.
Okay, welcome to the show. Whether you are listening in the morning, the afternoon, or the evening, my name is Freya O'Dell, and in today's show, I will be talking all things international with Rebecca Ricketts, a head of English in Dubai. We will be discussing making the move internationally, the differences between the UK education systems and education abroad, and what it is like to lead English internationally.
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and you are listening live. Tune in live at ttradio.org, or to join in the conversation, download the Podbean app and search Teachers Talk Radio. Follow the hashtag TTRadio. Tune in, talk it out, with Teachers Talk Radio.
Okay, so second time lucky, I'm hoping. Rebecca, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you
hear
me? Yes!
Oh,
good, we're working!
We're connected. We are connected. Oh, my goodness. Honestly, the technical side of doing a show like this is the most stressful thing in the world because there's always something that goes wrong. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. I'm good. I'm glad now that I've actually got sorted and I can hear you. Yeah, I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Like you, I'm good now that technically we're sorted. So that's really, really good. So how's your holidays so far? How long have you been on holiday and has it been good so far?
I've been off for 2 weeks so far. It's just been a little bit of a, you know what it's like at the end of term, you just feel a little bit lost, don't you? You think, should I be awake? Should I be asleep? So I've had 2 weeks to chill and now I'm just like, right, getting back into life a little bit. It's just so hot in Dubai right now. It's really, really uncomfortable at times. How's your holiday?
Yeah, really good. So what temperature is it there at the moment? Because I always moan about Italy being hot, but we only ever really get to probably 40 max, and we're around 33, 34. But in Dubai, it's crazier, isn't it, than that?
Well, it was today I was cycling back from the gym and I shouldn't have done it, and it was 42 degrees, but humidity that comes with it. And I never expected, again, this is something that I've learned coming here, coming to a desert country, you don't realize actually the level of humidity. That's the heat that's the problem. You go outside and your sunglasses, you can't see. We're still in masks here when we walk around. So it's quite overbearing at the moment.
Yeah, I can't. We are lucky. I mean, our numbers are going up, but we are lucky in that we don't have to wear masks when we're outside unless it's a crowded space. And I just don't know how I would operate if we had to wear masks all the time. It's the heat. I will do it if I have to do it, but it's just, I can't even imagine how hot it is for you.
It's been really, really warm. And I think just being at home again and not in school and not having to wear my mask all the time. And then when I do go outside, I've almost forgotten again that it needs to be on. So yeah, it's just taken a little bit of getting used to. I mean, I was here last summer as well, because again, couldn't get home. You're in a similar situation to me with red lists and travel and all those kind of things. So you just got to make the most of it, haven't you? And find things to do that maybe aren't in 42 degrees heat. Maybe cycling wasn't my finest move this morning.
Yeah, I mean, it is tough not going home, but you're right. We kind of have to crack on, don't we, and just make the most of it. I kind of get into, I don't know about you, but I get into a pattern in Italy over the summer where I will go out first thing in the morning for my groceries when it's cooler. I will then siesta it during the lunchtime period when it's at its hottest. And then I'm becoming a bit of a night owl now. And I will go out in the evening when it's cooler again, because that's the only way to do things.
That's 100% the same as me. I'm like, if I'm doing anything in the morning, it's the same. If I'm walking anywhere or I'm going to the gym, everything has to either be in the morning or really late at night.
And yet, it was so funny last week, and I don't mean this horribly to anyone listening in England, when everyone was moaning about, I think it was the high 20s. And I was like, my goodness, if only.
If only. But then again, I suppose I'm quite spoiled with the AC. So everywhere you go, you just get blasted with cold air. And I remember going home my first summer that I was living in Dubai, and I couldn't sleep on a night time because I didn't have any AC on.
Yeah, no, I don't have AC. So I've got about three fans on the go, all the windows open at night. It is a nightmare, but wouldn't have it any other way. Look, I am so excited to talk to you today. Obviously, I'm doing these recorded shows now, so this will go out at some point live and will be available as a podcast. But I was thinking about the content and the things that I'm really passionate about, obviously, are English teaching and international teaching and teaching and learning. So before we get going on that topic, tell me a little bit about yourself, first of all, and your career to date, so the listeners will know exactly who you are.
Okay. So tracking back this, I've just finished my 10th year teaching. Up until living in Dubai, everything I did was in Yorkshire. I went to university at Leeds. I did my PGCE there. I then moved back to the coast and I taught in Scarborough the first 3 years of my career. And then I moved slightly more inland in between Scarborough and York and taught in a comprehensive school there for 4 years. I got to a point there where I was deputy curriculum leader. I was doing things whole school reading and reading for pleasure. And embedding reading cultures in schools is a huge passion of mine. Teaching and learning like yourself. I mean, Freya, I've followed you for years on Twitter and seen all your amazing ideas. And I think it's that kind of community. You know, teaching and learning is a massive passion of mine. So I did 7 years in the UK and, like I said, I was deputy curriculum leader for English and I just needed a change. I just needed to do something a little bit different. So I applied in Dubai and then I came there as a teacher and I was quite happy to just step back from any kind of department, whole school responsibility. I just needed some time to get to grips with the new culture, with living and working here. And then 6 months in, I was promoted to head of department, which I never even knew if I wanted to be a head of department, to be honest. The school I'd worked in the UK, my head of department was amazing. And I just always used to think, I'll never be able to do her job. But I got offered the opportunity and I've never looked back. And I've loved it. So you're meeting me at a bit of a time of transition because the school that I was working in has just closed for 2 years for refurbishment. So I've gone and found myself another job in Dubai where I'm about to become head of English there as well. And again, it's a really exciting opportunity. It's a through school. Most of the schools in Dubai, most are all from, you know, early years right up to sixth form. And this school will just be starting its first year 9 intake. So I've got a bit of a breather from GCSEs. And after the last 2 years that we've had with the grading fiasco, I'm actually really looking forward to it. And it's going to be a really amazing opportunity to really go back to what I love to do, which is build curriculum, focus on teaching and learning, put policies in place, think about implementing strategies for reading and literacy whole school. So it feels like a really exciting time right now where I'm at. So when you put that thing out on Twitter, I thought this is a really good time to talk about it because I'm quite galvanized.
That's amazing. That's amazing. And we've got so much to talk about. So let's start off by talking about moving internationally, because it's something that a lot of people are interested in, a lot of people are keen to do, but some are quite nervous to do it as well, quite understandably, because it is a big, big decision.
Oh, huge. Yeah.
When did you decide to move internationally?
So I was 29, so this was 3 and a bit years ago. And I had spent, so my parents have a house in Spain. And so every school holiday, I'd be on the first plane out and I would literally be going straight over there, spending my entire 6 weeks holiday, going over at Easter. Whenever I could go and get a flight, I would be over there. And I started thinking to myself, this is a bit ridiculous. Like, I feel like I'm literally living now for the holidays, like we do anyway, but to get out. So I started looking originally at schools in Spain. Local to the area where my parents have their place. I just got a little bit braver, I think. I knew people that had come to Dubai. I did a little bit of research and I just felt like I was at a point in my career, like I mentioned, my previous head of department, she was incredible, but we were the same age and we were a young staff. So whilst I was ambitious, I was also very aware that there wasn't going to be much room sideways or above. So I just knew that I needed to start looking for a new opportunity. Nothing in the UK was exciting me. So I thought, I'm 29, I'm going to be 30 this year. I think it's time to move out of Yorkshire, do something brave. And it is scary. I'm not going to deny it. It's very overwhelming when you first move abroad. But then you've got the whole community that I'm sure we'll come on to talk about, to support you. And quite honestly, and I know you say this quite a lot on Twitter as well, it's the best thing I've ever done in terms of my work, in terms of my social life, everything, the opportunities that I've had in and outside of teaching. I would thoroughly recommend it. I'm a typical expat teacher that said, oh, I'll just do the 2 years. I'll just do my 2 year initial contract and then I'll go home. That's not happened, and there's got no sign of happening anytime.
That's amazing. So you are, I mean, definitely, definitely braver than me, because I've come to Italy, and part of the reason I came to Italy was because I love Italy, but also because it's actually quite quick to get back to England if I need to. You've been a lot braver going further afield. Was there a particular draw for you with regard to Dubai? Was there something about Dubai that really intrigued you and interested you?
There were a few things. I knew of people who had been teaching in schools where I'd been, and we'd just kind of missed each other, and they'd gone over to Dubai and never come back. To be perfectly honest, the distance doesn't feel that horrendous. It's a 7-hour flight direct from Dubai to get me back to Manchester or to Newcastle, and then it's equidistant to get home. So I don't really feel, if I needed to get home in an emergency, other than this red list situation, I would be able to get there quite quickly. So it wasn't really the worry about being far away from home. But what I actually liked the idea of with Dubai is the fact that it then becomes a massive springboard to the other side of the world that I'd never explored. And pre-COVID, I really made the most of those opportunities. I went to Sri Lanka, I've been to the Maldives, I've been to Seychelles. And it's just been really amazing to go and see and immerse myself in other cultures. And I think the other thing about Dubai in particular, and the UAE really, there are a lot of parts of the country where it is very westernized. I've been very fortunate with the school that I've been in for the last 3 years, because it was purely teaching Emiratis and Emirati girls. So I've been very, very immersed in the local culture and heritage. And I think, and it's something I feel very passionate about, because I don't think people ever see that in the headlines about Dubai. They never really get the background and the culture. And I feel very, very fortunate to have had those experiences and been so welcomed by families and the community that I was working in, to actually really immerse myself in more of the Emirati heritage. I think Dubai, like everywhere, you know, it's very expensive to live. There's been a lot of challenges for people with COVID. But again, I think that's everywhere around the world, isn't it? You know, job markets, housing, cost of living, all those things. But if anybody's listening and thinking, oh, I don't know, honestly, just do it. And you'll be like, you'll say you're doing it for 2 years, and then you're going to end up being cast out when you need to retire.
That's so true, though, isn't it? They say with international teaching, you're either a 2 year, a 5 year, or a lifer. Yeah. I think I'm a lifer now. I think I love it. And I just don't see myself going back to England. And, you know, maybe one day I'll be brave enough to go as far as Dubai or even further. We'll see. So with regard to the interview process, tell me a little bit about that, because I'm sure people will be interested to know what it is like to interview for an international school.
It was odd, I'll be honest. It was a very different experience for me, because, well, I had two interviews. I had an interview down in London, which was for an international group of schools that's based in Dubai. Mm-hmm. And I went and had a face-to-face interview. But that wasn't the job that I went for. The job that I went for was a Skype interview. And it was, now it's really interesting, because we're in this culture of teaching online. My most recent job interview, because of COVID, was also over Zoom. But to do my first ever interview on Skype was really quite interesting and very nerve-wracking, because you know what it's like in the UK. You go into the school, you meet the children, you go and teach a lesson. And there was none of that for them or for me. So they were taking a big risk. I suppose, by employing somebody who they'd never actually seen teach. I had to provide a lot more references than normal. I think I had four referees for my job.
Wow.
So there were four people that wrote my reference. But the interview process itself was just lovely. And the school that I went to, even over Skype, I just knew it was going to be the right school. And it was really, really, really affirming. It was even more nerve-wracking. I don't know about you, when I'd not been and even seen the school or met people face-to-face, it was really nerve-wracking that first day. But at the same time, they were so aware of it, they just made me feel very welcome. But typically, I would say that the interview process, if you end up applying for a school that's part of a bigger chain, it starts more with like a HR interview, and you find out the packages and what, you know, what's going to happen in terms of your housing and what your salary is going to be. And then from there, they kind of start to place you within a school where they think you might fit. It's a very well organized process, I would say, in whatever kind of school you end up applying for. You know, they're used to international teachers, they're used to people coming internationally. And I think that the support in place is brilliant. I don't know about you, Freya, but I feel that it's actually, if we ever wanted to go back to the UK, which I really struggle to imagine that I will, I feel that there's not the same level of support or understanding when you're trying to get a job coming back from an international school. Because of the situation that I mentioned with the school that I have been working at and its closure for 2 years, some people have decided this is the time that they are going to move back to the UK, and they have really, really struggled. And we're talking about very well qualified, very well experienced educators who are absolutely fantastic. But the UK they're not getting those interviews in the same way that you do in the international sector. So I would say if you're going to do it here, it's a very, very nice organized process. But yeah, I did find for people trying to get back into the UK, that's been a little bit more of a challenge.
I think that's so super interesting. So I felt that, I mean, my interview for my current job was so much more relaxed. And like you say, it was kind of weird at the time to do a Skype. It was nice. I had all my, I've said before, I had all my post-it kind of notes around my laptop so they couldn't see. So it's kind of advantageous in that way. But it's probably become more of a norm now, given the situation. I mean, I'm sure, you know, English schools will go back to the face-to-face interviews, and that's the right thing to do. But it's maybe people are a bit more versed and perhaps prepared to do an interview online now because we're so used to being online. But I also think it's really interesting what you say about going back to the UK and the struggles that people have. And I wonder if that is a concern for people who perhaps fancy doing a couple of years internationally and then eventually going back to the UK. It is a shame, I think, because it's a little bit short-sighted for me in terms of when you go internationally, you really develop yourself as a practitioner, I feel, in all sorts of ways. And you have a much more global outlook, which I think is a very positive thing as well. But it is a shame. I've heard of a number of people really struggling to get back into the UK market. And I think that's something that needs consideration. And perhaps we also just need to, when we are working internationally, think about how we keep abreast with the things that are going on in the UK educationally wise, which is why Twitter perhaps is such a good thing.
Oh, I completely agree with everything that you've just said. I mean, in my previous school, I ended up doing some training because myself and my line manager were both really about Twitter all the time. And I was like, I couldn't understand that people weren't connecting with what an amazing resource it is, you know, not just in terms of the things that people post and the resources, and but it's the conversation and it's the communication. And I honestly, Twitter for me and my teaching has been one of the best. It's the best free CPD I've ever had, to be honest.
I agree. I think it's transformed me as a teacher. It's really, really pushed me. So when you got the job, let's go back to you and your job. How was the support in terms of the transition over to Dubai? Because that can be quite a lengthy period of time between getting the job and actually moving out there. But how was that process for you in terms of making the actual move?
So the school were incredible in terms of organising flights, the paperwork, everything that I needed to get into the country, and then organising my visa. And again, the whole setup is ready for that. The school that I'm moving into in Dubai in September, well, we start in August. At the end of August, when we've had new staff induction, they're speaking directly to people that are not in the UAE. And the support there in terms of getting people's belongings over, finding them accommodation when they first move in, you know, staff kind of integration, nights out, all those kind of things, they're all prepared for, they're all planned for. Any question that you think you're going to have, and I mean, I used to wake up, I don't know about you, like once I'd made the decision and I'd accepted the job and I'd resigned from my school, I'd get that 3 a.m. anxiety of, well, can I buy this there and can I do that there? And I'd wake up in the morning and think, right, okay, think what random questions that I've had with myself at 3 a.m. and as I'm scrabbling for the answers. But I just think, and I don't know what it's like, what your experience was in Italy, but certainly here, everybody that I've always spoken to, there's always, it's almost a little bit like Freshers Week, to be honest. It's like, yeah. Teachers start back. We have the thing that I do love about here is teachers get a full week at the start of the school year before the students even come in. And even when I'm about to start a new job, what that's enabled me to do and kind of just walking away from my laptop for a little while, knowing that I'm going to have that time in school whilst I'm going to be learning all the new policies, it just makes such a difference, I think, to teacher well-being, because especially they're very aware that in the international market, usually people are travelling all summer and they don't want to be thinking about school. But, you know, we all have teacher guilt and we all end up working. But I do think that definitely there's a lot of consideration, and not just the move over, the actual support when you get here, you know, working out how to get your electricity and your water turned on, how you actually go about renting an apartment, because that in itself in Dubai is very different to the UK. We pay in checks here. I mean, it's a totally different situation. And just little things along the way, I think. And again, the school that I have been working in, the school I'm going to, by international standards, they're very small. But even in these much, much bigger international schools, that sense of community, and I think that fact of, you know, your family aren't here, so you've got to rely on your colleagues, you've got to rely on the people that are around you before you start making friends outside of school as well. I think that's all really well accounted for, to be honest.
Yeah, I think it's obviously a very smooth process because they're so used to it, and they've probably tweaked and tweaked a program until they've got it where they want it to be. And I think what you say about the induction program is really interesting, and something perhaps that the UK could look at, you know, even though teachers are making the move abroad, having a really fantastic induction program that goes beyond a day. So we have, I think it's 3 days here. It used to be a week, but it's gone down to 3 days since COVID. It's really good for new teachers just to settle them in, to brief them on all the systems and the structures, to get them time with their heads of department. It's just a much more organized and kind way to start a new job, isn't it, really?
I think so, definitely. But I think even just when you've been established and you know that you're going back into school for a few days, just to get your head back into the game before you start seeing the children face to face, and just having that time to just be like, oh, this is what my classroom does and this is what it looks like. So no, I do, that's one of the things I really do appreciate about here. And again, because of, so our weekend is Friday, Saturday, so we work Sunday to Thursday, but schools close a couple of hours earlier on a Thursday. And again, just something that's, we start very early every day. We start at 7:30 and finish at 3:00. So the teaching days during the week are longer, but finishing at 1:30 on a Thursday makes all the difference, because you feel like your weekend has doubled in size just by getting that afternoon. So just small things like that really have made a big difference, I would say, like I said, to my work-life balance.
Absolutely. Is there anything that you kind of wish you'd known before you've flown out? Is there anything that when you look at the process, and as fantastic as the process is, it is a very, very different experience. So is there anything that you kind of wish, oh, I really wish I'd known that before I came out?
How time consuming a lot of the paperwork can be. There were a lot of nights in that first month in particular where I found myself in a mall or in an office, or I mean, everything's open a lot later here. And the nights were very long. And then obviously I was going into work and teaching the next day. And I did find the first few weeks quite overwhelming, just trying to get everything organized. I'm a very impatient person by nature. So there I am trying to get everything. blink and a cat's whisker, and it's taken a little bit longer than perhaps I would like it to be. But once I'd got my apartment and once I'd started to get my furniture, everything just kind of fell into place. And that initial frantic month, it disappeared very quickly into my memory. So, I would just say that I think when you first get here or wherever it is that you are moving to, it will be very intense. But then it kind of just levels itself out a little bit.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. I mean, you have to remember that when you move abroad, it's like moving house, isn't it? There's so many different things that you have to set up: electricity, gas, water, doctor, dentist. All of those things need setting up. And you know, if you're living in a country where the first language is in English, that can be tricky. But people help you out with that. And then, of course, I would add, you know, with our good old friend Brexit. It hasn't become impossible, but it's become harder. And there is a little bit more paperwork that needs doing to secure your position here. So Italy has been really good with that. And the Italians have been so supportive and so helpful. But that is just something to bear in mind, that Brexit has made it harder in Europe, at least. Okay, so you're there in Dubai, you've settled in. Mm-hmm. What for you are the biggest similarities and the biggest differences between teaching in Dubai and teaching in England?
The biggest similarities, I would still say things like accountability, results. Dubai has its own. So of all the seven Emirates, all the different Emirates have different rules in terms of how education looks. They've got their own education kind of department. So we've got the KHDA, they're called in Dubai, which is the Knowledge and Human Development Authority. I probably should check that before I say that. I'm sure that's what it is. And we get observed by them. Schools get inspected by them once a year. So the process is similar to Ofsted, but also very rigorous, because you never quite get over one, you know, until the next one comes. And they kind of factor you when you know roughly when they're coming, because they schedule you in at the same time as every year. So, for example, if your school is seen in February one year, it'll most likely be February the following year. So I would say that, but definitely because here, I don't know what it's like in Italy, but here, the parents are all paying for students' education. So school places are a really big deal, making sure that school places are filled. I've seen some horrible horror stories on Twitter where people have been offered a job and then it's gone in the last few minutes because, literally, as people have landed in the country, because they haven't got the same kind of numbers. So there's those kind of things. Definitely there's a bigger emphasis on how many students you've got on roll. But in terms of day-to-day teaching, I mean, the experience that I have had has been so unique and so rewarding. So I was working, as I said, just purely for teaching Emirati girls. The classes were tiny. Culturally, you know, we had to be so appropriate. Everything had to be really, really vetted and checked. It made teaching quite difficult in some respects because it cancelled out an awful lot of literature that we could actually share and teach to the girls to make sure that we were being culturally appropriate. But I have to say, I think in terms of me as a teacher in the classroom, it's been the best experience for me because I thought I was patient before, but I've really learned a new level of patience in the classroom, of empathy. I've learned a lot from the people around me because I've been teaching English as a second language, which I'd never done in obviously quite the same way before. And it's been eye-opening and it's been absolutely fascinating. And there have been times when I've gone in and planned a lesson and 3 days later I'm still teaching the same lesson. And then there have been other times where I think, oh, they're never going to get this, and they've got it in five. You know, it's been a really good opportunity for me, as again, to refine my practice in a completely different way. So now moving into an international school where we've got a variety of different languages and different starting points, I'm really looking forward to that challenge, to be honest, because I think I'm going to be able to take a lot of what I've taken from the UK, and I'm going to be able to then obviously put in what I've learned just teaching purely Emiratis. I do think, and I don't know what, well, I think we've kind of touched on it, but I do feel that there is a little bit of a stigma about international teaching. It's a tough game, isn't it? It's not easy. And I do think that people, there's sometimes this kind of, oh, it's a bit of a sellout. And I think, no, it actually isn't. It's actually very, very challenging. And it is something that I feel quite passionate about getting across. You know, we do work very, very hard. We teach children of all different backgrounds, all different nationalities. And I think, like you say, it's about keeping yourself in it, keeping yourself on your A game. And again, for me, I come back to the same thing. That's why Twitter has been so invaluable, because I am connecting to people like you who are in Italy. I am still connecting to people in the UK. And it just makes you aware, no, I am doing the right thing. I am challenging my students. They are making progress. They are being exposed to a range of different texts, even if I have to make sure they're so culturally appropriate. But I definitely think that the similarities are actually, that I think there are quite a lot of similarities, to be honest, based on my experience anyway. What about you? What do you think in Italy?
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. I and again, I don't really understand why some people view international teaching in a negative way. I think it's an absolutely brilliant thing to do. I think it's enriching in terms of being a global citizen. But I also think you made a really interesting and valid point about how we work in fee-paying schools. And with fee-paying schools, there does come this level of accountability with regard to results and outcomes. You know, there is a high, high, high expectation that pupils will succeed because of those fees. And I also think what's really interesting at the moment is that fee-paying schools are in this precarious situation at the moment. And I know we definitely feel it here in Italy with COVID and, you know, people who have perhaps been based in this country but are English, for example, are potentially returning home because of the situation. And so international schools, I think, at the moment are having to be very, very careful with regard to the funding that they get from students coming in and keeping a high level number of students on roll. So it's quite a challenging period, I think, for international schools. And not one to be negated. I think that we do work incredibly hard, but we work hard in perhaps slightly more efficient way, which gives us an opportunity to have a life away from school as well, which brings me on to building an international life. How has that been for you outside of school?
Oh, it's been incredible. I think what you just said there about efficiency, definitely, I might stay in school a little bit longer, but it just means that my weekends are free. I've already touched a little bit on the travel that I've done, but I mean, oh my goodness. I mean, Dubai is just one of these places where you can be skydiving one weekend, you can be laid on the beach going. I mean, I've literally taken it and grabbed it with both hands, especially at the beginning, because I did for about 3 months think I was only going to be here for 2 years. I don't know, you find yourself saying yes a lot more. I think you have to. When you're out here, when you're living internationally on your own, you know, you've got to say yes a lot more, because otherwise you're going to find that you're limiting your experiences. And, you know, even just traveling within the UAE this year, because I haven't been able to get really out of the country. I mean, I was very fortunate and managed to sneak home at Christmas just before we went onto the red list. And it had been 18 months since I'd been in the UK, and it was so needed. But whilst I've been here in the UAE, just exploring the different Emirates, I mean, you come out of Dubai and you're an hour up the coast and it's a completely different climate, and you could be anywhere in the world. So yeah, I think international teaching, my international life has just been so much more enriching. I think in terms of my relationships with people, you know, you really do rely on the friends that you make here. Your friends really do become your family, I think, when you're over teaching abroad. But I then think that the friendships that you have at home, you work really hard to sustain them. And I do have to say one thing about COVID, which I did appreciate, was the fact that everyone was all at home. So I did so much more Zooming and so much more communicating with friends back at home. And I felt more connected to them than I had done up at that point in the 2 years that I'd been here, two, now 3 years, because we had that opportunity to keep up with each other. But I honestly, I think if anybody is considering an international move for that, for those kind of experiences, I say absolutely do them because and do it because there are things that I've experienced here that I will never, ever, ever be able to experience anywhere else. And I love it.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. That's just like playing to my heart that I think you're right. You have to, if you're going to go international, you have to be really ballsy and you have to be really brave and you just have to put yourself out there to meet people. I find that Italy can be a little bit closed off. Italians can be a little bit closed off. So you have to really throw yourself out there to meet people and make friends. And, you know, there's some amazing, if you move abroad, there are some amazing Facebook groups, for example, that with people who organize social events and things to do. And you just have to really get yourself involved, don't you?
Definitely. And like what you were just saying about the Facebook groups, I mean, they're an absolute fountain of knowledge, to be honest. I mean, anything that you need, you can just search for it in one of the expat groups, certainly over here. And it, again, similar, you know, the Emirati population in the UAE is actually really, really small. Your day-to-day interactions with local people are very, very minimal. It's different here to Italy, but it is a mainly expat, and I mean all over the world, expat community. And again, it's not just Emirati culture I've learned so much about. You know, I've made friends from all over the world, and I would never have had that opportunity if I'd stayed in Yorkshire my whole life. So it's just a case of throwing yourself out there, saying yes to things, thinking, okay, I shouldn't have said that yes to that, and I probably won't do that again, but you tried it.
Been there, done that. but yeah, you really do. You really do. Right, I'm going to play a few adverts, and then we're going to continue talking teaching and learning and leading an English department, if that's all right with you.
Sounds fab.
Fab. I'm going to play these adverts, and then we'll be back.
Creative Resources, made for teachers by teachers. At Creative Resources, we've been rethinking what a classroom can be. We've created a huge range of more than 2,500 original and exciting resources that span across more than 15 different subject areas. Whether you're looking for primary or secondary level resources, careers options, PSHE, arts or humanities, Creative Resources have the resources for you. We offer full curriculum packages and unique challenging escape rooms themed on topics such as Shakespeare, Tudors and fractions. We have quizzes, task cards, Tarsia puzzles and lots more. Better still, more than 100 resources can be accessed for free. Just visit our website www.creativeresources.com. You can get 10% off any order you make on our website by using the discount code TT Radio. Creative Resources, made for teachers by teachers. Every teacher loves stationery, right? Imagine getting a selection of fun, beautiful and unique stationery items designed and selected especially for teachers, delivered through your door every month. You need to check out teacherslovestationery.club.
I'm always so excited when the box arrives. It's such a treat.
My Teachers Love Stationery Club box is just a little treat to myself every month.
It's always full of delightful and surprising items, including some really good quality stationery brands like Faber-Castell and Stabilo.
And because you never know what you're going to get, it makes it even more fun and special when you get it.
It feels really great to be supporting a family business that's run by real teachers. I can't help feeling like they just know what I'm going to enjoy using stationery-wise better than I do myself.
Visit teacherslovestationery.club and enter the code TTRADIO when you buy your first stationery box to save £2 today. Teacherslovestationery.club. Introducing the Leadership Masterclass Series by Diana Osagie. Learn how to ditch your fears and develop your leadership confidence. How to deal with difficult colleagues. How to thrive when you lead in a challenging environment. And how to get colleagues to buy into your vision. Join Diana for her online leadership masterclasses starting on the 10th of July and running all the way through the summer. These sessions are the perfect way to prepare and refresh for the next academic year and beyond. Book your place at courageousleadership.co.uk/events now. The
first 50 leaders to sign up get an additional free mini coaching session with Diana herself. Don't miss this. Courageous Leadership Masterclasses at courageousleadership.co.uk/events.
Okay, so I'm here with Rebecca Ricketts, Head of English in Dubai, and we are talking all things international teaching, and it's been such a fantastic conversation so far. So let's talk about teaching and learning in the classroom. You've mentioned some key differences already in terms of having to be much more aware culturally of the text that you choose, and also this idea about, and I think this is a really important idea that sometimes can get lost, although it shouldn't get lost, about the fact that we're really teaching language learners as well. What has that transition for you been like in terms of moving into a classroom in Dubai?
Well, for me, I'm a lover of literature. Language has never really been my first love when teaching English. And I think the point that you've just made there is something that I probably didn't really consider as much until I actually got here. And I did have 1 year where I was teaching purely English language with no literature other than at Key Stage 3. And I did find that really, really dry. So it was a way of getting literature for me back into the classroom, exposing the children to books. I found here more, I think, just again, second language learners, that reticence with reading. I've really had to be quite creative in terms of getting the girls to read and getting them to actually enjoy and take pleasure, because they purely just found it so challenging. When I started teaching at the school, we were in sets, class sets, and when I became head of department, I moved it to mixed ability. And I do think that was the best thing for the environment, because what we tended to find is the girls who were in bottom sets from year seven upwards would remain and be classed as second language learners, whereas the girls in the higher sets would be entered as first language. And I mean, that was something I never, ever took lightly, and something that I was so, so proud of the girls for, was the fact that, you know, they were being entered as first language learners. And with that, we would then have a few students. Obviously, the situation's not the same as the UK, where you've got to have literature and language. And then we would have a few teaching literature as well. And I just think, for me, seeing them be resilient made me up my game, because it made me want to be able to provide them with resources and opportunities to kind of read different things, come up with different ideas. And I definitely have changed my practice a lot, I think, to kind of teach language in a more literary based way.
That's really, really interesting. So my background is linguistics, so I'm a big lover of the language, and I know I'm like an oddball here, total oddball. Although I love reading as well, love reading and love literature. But what for me has become more and more apparent is this constant reminder, really, that we are dealing with pupils who are learning English as a second language, and how important that sort of foundational knowledge is with regard to grammar and those kind of structures, and trying to incorporate more and more of that into our daily lives. It can be dry. I know what you're saying when you say that it can be dry, but it's also really interesting. And I think sometimes, I mean, it's not only that they really, really need it, but they can grow to love it, because when they understand the mechanisms of language, that becomes quite exciting for them. I'm a big fan of PET and FCE, and I'm doing some IELTS work at the moment with someone. And it's really interesting for us to, I mean, it's been a long time since I did my degree, so it's really nice to have a re-education, if you like, with regard to the mechanics of the language.
Definitely. And I do feel that I've had to upskill myself in that kind of sense as well. I taught IELTS when I first got here. And again, it was actually, like you say, looking at the mechanisms of the language. And the students were asking me questions that were actually really making me think. So I would say, again, it's a development of my skill set that I've definitely had to try and incorporate, because it's something that you don't really realize when you are moving into that international kind of teaching. You do have to completely change the way that you structure everything. For me, one of the biggest things, and I absolutely adore her, I'm a total fangirl of Kate Jones. using her retrieval practice strategies. I mean, she's local. She's down the road. She's in Abu Dhabi.
We love the Jonesy.
Isn't she? And she's been so helpful. And again, for me, I found certainly it'd be very interesting to see what it's like when I go into this new school in the international setting. But the girls that I was teaching, that kind of structure to the lesson, that use of retrieval, getting them to think about and the actual, not repetition of activity, but certainly that repetition and developing and building on their knowledge really then helped them with their skills. And I found that that has been a massive, massive kind of way of, I was looking at what I was doing with my teaching, but didn't really know what I was calling it and what. And then I came across Kate and I was like, oh my goodness, right, this is what it is. Amazing. So that's been definitely a huge help, I think, to structure not only of my own lessons, but when I've been planning curriculum, you know, for the whole department and then supporting whole school.
Yeah, definitely. So language learning, cultural differences, that whole retrieval practice, which, I mean, we love Kate Jones. Absolutely big up to Kate Jones. Were there any other changes for you? I mean, teaching is teaching in essence, isn't it? And English teaching is, in essence, about good literature, opportunities for writing, grammar, speaking and listening. Is it that fundamentally different?
I don't think so. No, I don't think it is at all. I think for me, the biggest thing, the biggest challenge for me was, yeah, the pace of my lessons. Thinking, you know, in the UK, it's all pace, pace, pace. Or it was in the school I was in. It was all about, you know, get through it, whiz through it. Whereas here, what I've really enjoyed is actually giving the girls the time to relish what they're learning. I was adamant that we would always finish a novel because I thought it doesn't matter. We'll get, especially this year, we've had to slow things right down because we've still been on a lot of distance learning. But I just think, you know, you can have the challenge in there. You can have the support on the scaffolding in there. But I think just for me, just slowing down and just taking time for those ideas to permeate has definitely, definitely helped the students and myself.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, our school next year have a big drive in oracy. And I would like to say that I do a lot of oracy because I think actually you also really come to understand the importance of oracy when you're learning a language and the importance of speaking the language as often as you can as well. Would you agree with that?
Definitely, definitely I would. It's really difficult in a way because of the situation that we've been in. I haven't taught a full face-to-face lesson now since February 2020.
Wow.
So the situation in Dubai, and they're carrying this on next year, is that students can still opt for distance learning if they wish. Now, the school that I was in, a lot of the students did opt for that. I know that when I started my new school, it's, and a lot of the schools here, I would say now, are 100% face-to-face again. Or just about 100% face-to-face. But like I said, the school I was in was very unique in its style anyway. But for me, I noticed a massive difference in terms of then the progress the girls were making because they weren't having that same opportunity to speak English in the same way that they were having when they were in school every day. And you're totally right, to understand the language is to speak the language. And you know, they would be speaking to me 1 second in English and then they'd turn to their friend and start speaking in Arabic. And, you know, we constantly had that. Okay, remember where you are. You're in an English classroom. You've got to be speaking the language. Because I used to say to them, I don't know how you're doing this. How?
Yeah.
How can you be having one conversation in one language and then in another? Fascinating. So, yes, I do think that it is really, really important. And I think, you know, talking for writing, all those kind of strategies, it's a lot of the things that we've embedded in our classrooms because we've needed to get the girls speaking and then thinking like an English speaker.
They are. I mean, I think that's the other thing as well for international students and for you know, any students in the UK who are operating on two languages. It is absolutely incredible to watch. Their competency in speaking languages is just second to none.
It is. It's fantastic. And it's a skill, really, that I'm quite envious of because the girls, yeah. say to me, oh, Miss, you're English. And I'm thinking, well, thank goodness it is.
I'm totally envious. I was speaking to an Italian friend today, and I literally, when I'm on WhatsApp, I have to just Google Translate everything because my Italian is so rubbish after 3 years of being here. It's so hard, isn't it? So for them to do it is amazing. So I think another strength of international teaching is in fact the actual syllabus that we follow. So we do IGCSE here and the IB program. What's your curriculum program?
So the school I was at was IGCSE, and the school that I'm going to, and it was Cambridge, and the school that I'm going to is EdExcel IGCSE, which I'm so much more excited about because the text choices are so much better for literature. I just think it makes, no offense Cambridge, I just think it makes more sense, to be perfectly honest. The reason why we didn't go for EdExcel at IGCSE at the previous school was because of the Shakespeare element, just because, you know, we were really focusing on getting them to be English as first language and then not going all the way back to Shakespeare. It was too much of a concept for them to actually be able to handle. But then at A level, I was teaching EdExcel, the EdExcel A level course, well, AS course, and I absolutely loved it. Mm-hmm. We used to do Ket and Pet with the girls when they were lower down at Key Stage 3 with the Cambridge. Then I've done the IELTS, and so now it's going to be, EdExcel IGCSE.
I love the EdExcel IGCSE. I think it's brilliant. And Claire, actually, on Twitter is such a helpful soul. I mean, I've probably battered her quite a bit recently because of all the, are we or aren't we doing the exams? But she's amazing. And it is a great course. It's a fantastic course. Although, controversially, Of Mice and Men is a set text. Now, I love it and I teach it, but it is a controversial choice, isn't it?
And I still love teaching it. I think a lot, there's just like a comfort blanket, isn't it, teaching Of Mice and Men? But I do love it. I know there's been a lot of debate and discussion about whether or not there should be a more appropriate text choice now or something slightly more modern. But I think that the students really get on board with it. And we taught it to girls in year 9 this year. And we handed out blank copies because they needed a fresh copy COVID-wise. And it was just the greatest thing ever, knowing that the ending wasn't, none of them actually knew how it was going to end. So that was really refreshing because I've never actually taught it before without the kids knowing the end before they've actually begun. So that was really, I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, the thing is for me, like when I was doing it with my year 11 class this year that I'd taken over, and we were doing it online, obviously, and I read the ending to them and there was just silence. There was absolute dead silence because they were so moved emotionally by that ending. And I just think that is the power of engaging literature for young people of that age, when they're really made to think about a circumstance or a situation. And I get that there are problems with it, but it is a text that resonates for a lot of pupils, and you know, they get a lot from it.
I mean, I taught 1984 to my students. They were in year 11 last year, and I got to do that face to face. And I mean, the debate and the discussion, they absolutely loved it. They were so, so, so engaged, like you say. The things that they were coming up with, they were coming home and they were going away and reading other things about anything to do with any like of the political side, looking at George Orwell. They were asking for more recommendations. And I just think when you get a class and you get a text that they absolutely just get on board with, there's no greater pleasure. There really, really isn't, in my opinion. I just absolutely, I love it. So I'm looking forward in September, because my new school were very, very text rich. They're really focus on pushing lots of varied literature to the students, and I just can't wait. I just think it's going to be brilliant.
So exciting. Have you had much of a experience with the IB program?
Not at all, and that's something I am really interested in, to be honest. I mean, I've stayed British curriculum the whole time, so actually moving into IB, that's something that I want to do more research and reading about, because it's becoming more and more popular over here. I know internationally it has been for a long time, but certainly in Dubai there's starting to be a big uptake on it, and I think it's one of those things that if I don't engage with it, I'm going to fall behind the times a little bit. Because you said you teach IB as well.
Yeah, and I love it. I think it's absolutely brilliant. I need to do a show on the IB program, I think. It's a great curriculum and really good for developing pupils holistically. Yeah, really, I'm a massive fan. So I just want to touch upon outside of the classroom, because this is one of the things, isn't it, that people might not realise, that when you move internationally, it is about the holistic side of developing children. And there's a huge expectation, isn't there, with regard to that extracurricular, that enrichment kind of programme. What is your experience of that?
I think it's been brilliant actually here, because I've really had to think outside the box. You've really got to kind of pull different ideas together, because, you know, there are certain things that aren't as readily available. You know, you don't have the same access to a wealth of theatre that you do in the UK. We do get screenings and we get showings of things, and we had a few companies. We went to take some girls to go see a version of an Inspector Calls, but it's not the same as it is in the UK. So you do have to become very, very creative. One of my colleagues in my previous school, she'd been working for ages up with a debating team. She'd got, you know, she'd found competitions and she was getting them to go out and compete. And that was something that, you know, she's given me all of those resources and she's given me all of her structure so that I can set that up in my new school as well, because it's a good way for us to keep in touch and touch base. But yeah, I think here, definitely, I say here, but I am speaking generally internationally, there is a real push and drive on that extracurricular. Sport is a massive one. Anything that you can do, not even within your subject. So I was straight away volunteering to help. I was singing with the school choir. I was helping with the school shows and performances. Anything that you can kind of do, I think, because, again, it is part of that community. And whether you're in a small international school or a large one, I do feel you get that sense of community that you can sometimes worry that you're going to miss when you leave the UK. So I don't know what your school's like, but my new school, it's definitely factored in to the timetable, extracurricular, making sure. And it's a subject responsibility that everybody is providing at least one extracurricular activity to do, you know, links to their subject.
Yeah, definitely. We have to do an extracurricular club. We have to for at least one term. So it is a massive part of the school, like you say, in terms of building a community, but also, you know, expanding that offering. And I really like what you say about, you know, getting involved with things outside of your subject area as well. So there's, you know, we have so many opportunities, from choir to orchestra to MUN to debating club to crafting clubs. And it's really nice actually to see the pupils outside of your subject area.
Oh, definitely. I always think that's when you really can build your relationship. You see them in a completely different light, don't you? I also think, and I do, I think again, it's internationally, I think schools, I think families, I think children just have a bit more of a global perspective. You know, I feel that we're really supporting young people when they're thinking about going to their universities. You know, we're talking about young people here speaking multiple languages. I also think about the ones who turn 18 and get on an airplane and go to the UK for potentially the first time on their own to go to university. And I do feel that the international community in that respect, with the extracurricular, is really setting young people up to be adults and preparing them that way for the future, perhaps a little bit more so than I would say my experience in the UK.
Yeah, I think I definitely agree with you there. And I think also that's probably got to do with the sort of transient nature of international schools. A lot of young people have moved around quite a bit, haven't they, as well? And they're just so adept to those sort of new situations, meeting new people, trying new things out. They just have a level of confidence about them because of that.
I think there's a confidence, and I think certainly here, there's a really nice element. There's a maturity with the young people, but there's also a sense of them still being young, not immature, but probably just their age. And it's a really nice balance. And you find also as well, when you're speaking to young people in these international settings, that they're just, I just find that they are very, very, I'm trying to think of the word that I want to use. I think confident, actually, to speak to a range of different adults, be in different social situations. We're talking about our holistic well-being and the lifestyle that we have as international educators. But I think as an international student, I honestly think it must be eye-opening in terms of the experiences you can have.
Absolutely. And I just want to talk finally, and you've been an absolutely amazing guest today. I've loved speaking to you about your sort of... your move in terms of a lot of people when they apply internationally might have to consider stepping down and stepping back into the role of teacher of English if they are currently a leader. I mean, I know I've done that, and then I've done that through choice as well. You did that to begin with, and then you became head of English. So I guess my questions would be, number one, how was it sort of stepping back initially? And then secondly, how does the experience of leading English internationally compare to the experience of leading in the UK?
I think to start with, I was, because I knew that obviously, and we've already talked about what it's like when you move abroad and the challenges that you face. I think if I'd also been taking on a department as a head of department, I think that would have been really, really overwhelming. So in a sense, it was good for me because it gave me time to just look at my teaching. I like to reflect, and I think it was a really good opportunity for me to see where and how I needed to be refining myself in this new setting. So that was never something that I was massively concerned about. And then when the opportunity to become head of department arose, like I said, I never even really knew if I wanted to be a head of department, but I saw so much potential in the school that I was in. I saw so much, the department, the teachers were incredible, but they just needed, there were just a few things that just needed tweaking and changing and clear communication and organization. And I thought, you know what, actually, I think I can do this, and I think I can really make a change here and a difference. And I think that is what's given me the confidence to now start applying for other head of department jobs, but actually looking now further up the ladder. And I do find here, you know, if you're hungry for it, the opportunities are here. If you want to expand and you want to move up the ladder and you want to move into leadership, it's definitely, again, you know, we've talked about it being transient. People do move around quite a lot more than they do in the UK. So I'm all for grabbing opportunities now with both hands and just continuing to develop. I would say leadership here, so I'd never actually been a head of department in the UK. I was deputy curriculum leader. They've been doing a few little things across the whole school to do with reading and things. But again, like we say, the fundamentals of teaching, the leadership here, again, I would say is fairly similar. It was a challenge to start with because I was totally fresh off the plane teacher, looking to everybody for all the advice. And then all of a sudden I was leading the department. That was an interesting transition for me personally because I felt a little bit concerned. You know, I'd been the one that was, please help me. And then I was like, right, now this is where I think we need to go. And I think one of the biggest things that I learned from that was try not to change everything at once.
Yeah.
Pace yourself, do a few things and do them well. I kind of was like, right, we need to start from scratch. And I think, you know, certainly in this next school that I'm going into, the foundations are there. It's amazing. And I think things can actually happen at a more manageable speed.
Definitely. I mean, I think you made, again, some really interesting points there. I think leadership is leadership wherever you are, you know, and I think the things that you have to take into consideration are the things that we've spoken about today, you know, in terms of language learning and different curriculums, perhaps. And I agree with you. I think there are so many opportunities for development. I think, you know, if you are thinking about making the move internationally, you have to really know why you want to move internationally. For me, it was about Italy and the country and the culture of having a healthy work-life balance. And I think that you have to then really kind of stick to that and remind yourself of why you've made such a huge move in the first place. But if you are really keen, if you are a leader and there are no leadership positions, it is worth considering just going and being a teacher in the first instance. Because as you say, Rebecca, like the settling in process is quite an interesting one and, you know, takes time to adjust to. And then the opportunities will come. For sure, the opportunities will appear because it is a transient nature and people move on all of the time.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. And I just, yeah, like I said, I think what the point that you've just made there as well about, you know your reasons for why you want to do it. Mine were very, very similar to yours. I remember reading your tweets because we moved at a similar time and I just thought, yeah, I'm totally on board with everything else. This is exactly why I've done it too. I needed to see what else was out there. And, you know, career-wise, more has come out of there. But I think ultimately, international teaching, regardless of leadership, we're teachers first. I believe that wholeheartedly. And I think that international teaching has made me a significantly better teacher.
Yeah, I agree. And I would say a significantly better teacher, but with a very healthy work-life balance.
I think that's part of being a better teacher. I'm definitely, my weekends, unless it's like total crunch time. I mean, going back to marking coursework, that was a little bit of a cult after a couple of years off. But yeah, I think you're right. I think if you keep being strict with your work-life balance, I mean, in the UK, I would never even dream I'd be far too exhausted going out for dinner midweek. And here, yeah, you know, I don't know if it's just because the sun is shining or whatever. I mean, I have to get up a lot earlier, but I still manage to seem to make time to go out for dinner during the week, and it doesn't impact my teaching. It doesn't impact anything. And I just think, you know, we've got opportunities to look after ourselves a lot more than perhaps I was getting in the UK.
Totally. I mean, I think I'm the flip now. I'm out like nearly every night. I need to calm it down a little bit. But it is. It's just wonderful. It's wonderful to be able to do a job that you love and have a life away from the school. But also, I think what's really, really important, because this is something that I've been thinking about and exploring, there's so much opportunity still with a platform like Twitter, which obviously we are all on, to continue that professional development as well, to keep up with the reading, to attend, you know, the webinars that are going on along. Please, 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 Research Ed, you know, all of those. Please keep doing them online as well for us international folk. And it's just amazing. It's the best of all worlds.
It definitely is. And again, I think any teacher that's not really, and I say to people, you don't even massively have to engage. You can be a bit of a lurker and you can have a bit of a look around and get a feel for it. But I just think it's the one thing that keeps me on my toes. It's the one thing that keeps me on my A game a lot more, because like you say, you compare and you see, and you see what other people are doing and how they're responding to things. And I just, and it's not just that, it's also, you know, when you see something and you think, oh gosh, am I doing the right thing here? I don't think I could have got through the CAGs and TAGs again had it not been for the discussions that were going on Twitter, and you realised you weren't the only person that was blindly stabbing around in the dark. So I definitely think that the Twitter community is something that I am so grateful for, because I feel like my next big step now is to actually start sharing, but that feels like a real big leap of faith. I feel like I read a lot of other people's ideas and I should start thinking maybe I should start sharing my own book.
This is the start. This is the start. You shared today. This is the start of it all. So next year, we expect you to share lots.
Okay, that could be my September resolution.
Oh, Gino, it's been absolutely amazing to talk to you today. Thank you so much for coming on. I just loved speaking with you.
Right back at you. It has been absolutely a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. And I guess have a lovely rest of the day.
Thank you very much and enjoy your summer. We've still got quite a few weeks.
I know. Holiday August is upon us. I'm going to play the closing credits and we'll see you next time. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
You've been listening to Teachers Talk Radio. Tune in live and listen back at ttradio.org. We look forward to hearing from you next time on Teachers Talk Radio.